MMS never took this area seriously, and my hope is that now maybe they will.
A federal court rules against Shell's drilling plans in the Beaufort Sea. From the Alaska Public Radio Network, this is Alaska News Nightly for Thursday, the 20th of November. Good evening, I'm Lori Townsend. Also tonight, a moving tribute for Ted Stevens on the Senate floor.
No senator has ever done more for his state than Senator Ted Stevens.
Those stories and more tonight on Alaska News Nightly.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by your local public radio station. If heating your home costs more than you can manage and you have a low income, the state of Alaska has heating assistance programs that may help. The programs have expanded to include families with a higher household income. For information or an application form, call 1-800-470-3058 or visit heatinghelp.alaska.gov. Sometimes a little help makes all the difference. This message is sponsored by the Alaska Department of Health and Social Services. Support for APR and coverage of the 50th anniversary of Alaska statehood comes from Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline.
Shell's offshore plan for drilling multiple exploration wells over 3 years in the Beaufort Sea ran up against another setback today after the Ninth Circuit Court upheld an earlier ruling saying that the Minerals Management Service did not take a hard look at impacts to bowhead whales, other marine mammals, and the centuries-old subsistence practices of the North Slope Inupiaq people. Shell Alaska General Manager Pete Schlaby says the company is disappointed in the decision.
We believe that the MMS did a very, very good job, and we've met or exceeded all the requirements for Arctic exploration. So we are still looking at this and considering our options for moving forward.
The Alaska Wilderness League, the North Slope Borough, Alaska Eskimo Whaling Commission, and others brought the suit against the Interior Department, saying MMS had rushed through the process and needed to update an environmental impact statement regarding cumulative impacts of increased vessel traffic, test well drilling, and overhead flights to marine mammals and those who depend on them. North Slope Borough Mayor Edward Itta says he's glad the court saw the legitimacy of the arguments.
My take is that I always felt that MMS never took this area seriously, and my hope is that now maybe they will.
Shell's Schlaby says the company spent about $250 million on leases and acquiring information in the Beaufort and Camden Bay area. But he says they have a lot of good work to show for it. And as they try to move forward, the data will provide site-specific information for possible development, as well as other Arctic Ocean information.
Like ice loading, ice scour, alike. And if we are lucky enough to find oil and gas in a commercial quantity, this will be information that we'll need for the next steps of development and for putting a permanent platform in place, putting pipelines in place. So it will all be good information, and it's dependent upon us actually proving oil and gas with a drill bit.
Even with falling oil prices, Schlaby says the company feels very strongly about the long-term future of development off Alaska's coastline. The borough's Mayor Itta says he's pleased that Senator-elect Begich has met with him to hear his concerns about offshore development, but Itta says he has no illusions about what the future will hold in that respect.
I don't kid myself about that eventually that there will be some offshore activity, but I've been really sticking to my guns on putting reasonable protective measures in place, and mitigation and monitoring and otherwise, that because I believe whatever standard is set now is what's going to be applied in the future.
Pete Schlaby says Shell officials are carefully reviewing today's lengthy court decision.
It's a 57-page document, so you know, and it was issued just a few hours ago. So we've got to look through that document and look through the decision. As I said, there was a dissenting judge on that decision, and I think he's made a lot of very good points. So we'll look at that and decide if we wish to appeal.
North Slope Borough Mayor Itta says he's anxious to see who will take the helm at the Interior Department, MMS, and the BIA under the incoming Obama administration so the borough can begin to make their concerns and positions known regarding future offshore exploration. Senator Ted Stevens made his final remarks on the Senate floor today, closing out his 40-year career representing Alaska in the nation's capital. His colleagues, some of whom just days ago were saying he should resign, gave him a touching tribute and applauded his work for Alaska and the nation. APRN's Libby Casey reports from Washington.
Senator Ted Stevens' farewell address brought his staff and some fellow senators to tears. His wife, daughter, and friends watched from the gallery. It was an emotional moment for Stevens, too.
I have really a difficult time today articulating my feelings, and I hope if I puddle up a little bit, as my old friend used to say, I'll be excused. But when I came to the Senate, Alaska had been a state for less than a decade. We were then more of an impoverished territory than a full-fledged state.
Stevens reflected on the changes Alaska has undergone and said no matter what, he always fought hard for his state.
My motto has been here, to hell with politics. Just do what's right for Alaska. And I've tried every day to live up to those words.
Stevens has had a rough few months. He was convicted in federal court and narrowly lost this month's election, ending his Senate career in a way that seemed unimaginable just a few years ago. Stevens mentioned his legal woes only once, saying he looks forward to removing the cloud that currently surrounds him. His comments showed gratefulness and pride at his four decades in office.
I really must pinch myself to fully understand that I'm privileged to speak on the floor of the United States Senate. Coming from a boyhood that I had, I could never even have dreamed to be here today. And home is where the heart is, Mr. President. If that is so, I have two homes. One is right here in this chamber, and the other is my beloved state of Alaska. I must leave one to return to the other.
Stevens closed his comments by wishing the Alaska delegation well, including his successor, and then he said goodbye.
That's it, Mr. President. 40 years distilled into a few minutes. I close by saying and asking that God bless Alaska and our governor, God bless the United States of America and our president, and God bless the Senate and every member of this body. I yield the floor for the last time.
The majority leader is recognized.
After a lengthy standing ovation, Stevens' colleagues, a mix of Republicans and Democrats, took to the floor to pay him tribute. Just a few weeks ago, a couple of them were threatening to kick Stevens out of the Senate because of his felony conviction, like Minority Leader Mitch McConnell, a Republican from Kentucky. But on Thursday, McConnell praised his party's longest-serving member.
I think it is safe to say without any fear of contradiction that no senator in the history of the United States has ever done more for his state than Senator Ted Stevens. Alaska would not be what it is today.
That's right.
But for him.
That's right.
Republican Senator Pat Roberts of Kansas joked about Stevens' gruff exterior and recalled when they first met.
And I sat there wondering, what on earth makes this man tick? Here was the most obstreperous, if not outrageous, person expressing his opinion, despite any other person that had an objection but insisted on making his point. And I went away from that meeting and said, that Ted Stevens fellow is one of the most unique people I have ever met. I just as soon not meet him again.
But Roberts said Stevens ended up being a big teddy bear, a great ally, and a fierce fighter for the United States. Many of the senators talked about him as a mentor. Stevens' fellow Alaskan, Lisa Murkowski, noted she was just 11 years old when Stevens took office.
When I think of the good things, the positive things that have come to Alaska in the past 50 years, I see the face, I see the hands of Ted Stevens in so many of them.
Few senators have served longer than Stevens. One of them is West Virginia Democrat Robert Byrd, who left his friend with an Irish blessing.
May all the roads that you have built, Ted, rise up to meet you. And may the wind, Ted, be always at your back. May the sun shine warmly upon your face, Ted. May the rains fall softly upon your fields. And until we meet again, may God hold you, Ted, in the hollow of his hand. Bless your heart, Ted. I love you.
As Stevens left the Senate floor, he was met by a small crowd of reporters. He paused for a moment to say that his job is done and that his colleagues' words meant a lot.
It's a very heartwarming feeling, but it's not, unfortunately, it's one that has a bottomless pit. I'm leaving, and that's bad. That's hard. No.
Stevens said he didn't want to puddle up before God and everybody. With that, the so-called Lion of the Senate, the guy known for his incredible Hulk ties, the man Alaskans call Uncle Ted, turned away and left. In Washington, I'm Libby Casey.
Still to come on Alaska News Nightly, Northwest Alaska mourns the loss of an important teacher of the Inupiaq language.
She was one of those people who became a tradition bearer without intending to.
That's ahead. Stay with us.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by Wells Fargo, financial pioneers in Alaska nearly a century ago, bringing Alaskans to the next stage. WellsFargo.com, the next stage. And by Alaska Conservation Solutions, providing ways to measure your carbon footprint and reduce your energy consumption at AlaskaConservationSolutions.com.
A state legislator from Fairbanks is calling on the governor to demand Alaska refiners get gas prices more in line with the lower 48. Representative Jay Ramris says Governor Palin's clout is a way to gain traction with the state's two refiners of gasoline, Tesoro and Flint Hills. Ramris chairs a legislative committee that's looking into why Alaska gas prices outpace those outside. The attorney general is also conducting an inquiry, but Ramris says the governor could provide a shortcut to resolution.
You can wait to get a 150-page report from the legislature and a corresponding one from the attorney general sometime in the first half of January, but it would be in the consumer's best interest to have the governor step in and have a conversation with the refiners and try to jawbone the price down using her bully pulpit.
Ramris's Gas Price Committee holds its third session Friday in Anchorage. The meetings have included input from gas station owners, refiners, economists, and the public. Ramris says they've shed a lot of light on the issue and pointed to refiners as the root of higher prices at the pump. He says there are good reasons why gas costs more in Alaska, including the state's small market and distance from outside competition, but that the price disparity between Seattle and Alaska cities has grown inexplicably in the last year.
There was price parity from the year 2002 until about March of 2008, within 15 or 20 cents of the Seattle retail gasoline price. And since March of 2008, that spread has gone to 70 to 90 cents a gallon. I think it's appalling. I cannot understand why it happened. Nobody can explain it to the committee. I think it's inexcusable.
Rammer says bills will likely be proposed next session to try to get at the problem, but that the governor could fix it without delving into complicated price control legislation. Governor Palin's spokesman Bill McAllister says the governor will not intervene until the AG's investigation wraps up.
It's a complicated area, and so it would be premature to say exactly what action, if any, ultimately is going to be necessary. But, you know, certainly administration is on top of it, and the governor will recommend legislation if she thinks that's necessary, and if there's some direct personal action she can take, she's willing to do that.
McAllister says it will likely be the end of the year before the Attorney General's office completes its inquiry into the gas price disparity between Alaska and the lower 48. A pair of oil and gas companies are exploring the possibility of bringing natural gas to Homer. The project is still a couple of years out at the very least, but as KBBI's Casey Kelly reports, all signs point to a positive outcome.
Armstrong Cook Inlet LLC, a subsidiary of Denver-based Armstrong Oil and Gas, has been testing for natural gas in the North Fork area for about 8 years. After recently discovering a commercially viable quantity, Armstrong officials met last week with officials from Enstar Natural Gas in Anchorage. A tentative agreement was reached for Enstar to build a pipeline to bring the gas to market. Curtis Thayer is an Enstar spokesman.
and the alternatives are taking it north and putting it into the existing grid, or possibly taking it down to Homer. And we're looking at both of those avenues right now. NSTAR currently has a certificate to serve Homer, and that would be what we're looking at to do first with that natural gas.
Thayer says the prospect is still at least 2 to 3 years from becoming reality. The companies must first get approval from the Regulatory Commission of Alaska to build a pipeline, whether or not it goes north or south. Then there's the cost and time it takes to build it. But he says things look good for Homer residents who are paying high prices for heating fuel.
Natural gas is about a half the cost, almost a third of the cost of fuel oil. And so there will be a significant savings for the residents that can benefit from being on natural gas. And plus, it's the lowest emissions. It's the cleanest fossil fuel out there.
The companies would also have to work closely with the city of Homer and the Kenai Peninsula Borough. If a pipeline is built to Homer, it would likely come straight into the heart of downtown and then spread out from there. Thayer says they'd like to eventually serve as many customers as possible.
The biggest benefit would be for large buildings such as the hospital and schools. There'll be a significant cost savings, and so it'd be something where you would build a system there and kind of spider web it out.
NSTAR and Armstrong haven't had much contact with the city or borough since natural gas exploration began almost a decade ago, but Thayer expects discussions to start soon. For his part, City Manager Walt Reedy says the idea of bringing natural gas to Homer is exciting.
Anything that would bring down the cost of energy and bring down the overall cost of living in Homer, it would be a great thing, great for the economy and great for individuals and their families.
Reedy says he's looking forward to working with the companies to plan and execute a distribution system for the natural gas when and if a pipeline is built. In Homer, I'm Casey Kelly.
Oil wealth from the North Slope is fueling Native Corporation dividends statewide. That includes Southeast Sea Alaska, which is issuing its second largest shareholder payment this decade. Coast Alaska's Ed Schoenfeld reports.
Arctic Slope Regional Corporation holds the rights to about half of the Alpine oil field west of Prudhoe Bay. That's brought wealth to the Barrow-headquartered Native Corporation and to others around the state. The Alaska Native Claims Settlement Act requires regional corporations to share the wealth, not all the wealth, but a portion, 70%, of natural resource earnings. Todd Antioquia is a spokesman for Juneau Bay Sea Alaska, the regional Native Corporation for Southeast.
What happens is each year the regional corporations pool those monies together and then they are repaid out to the regions on a per capita basis. Based on the original number of shares that were issued at the company's inception.
Money from Arctic Slope's oil fields and other corporations' resource earnings is giving Sea Alaska dividends a big boost this year. It's adding almost $900 to the fall distribution to be paid out in early December. About 60% of shareholders will get that money directly. Urban and at-large enrollees get about $1,050. That's a mix of the resource money and Sea Alaska's own earnings. Antioquia says Sea Alaska's contribution comes from subsidiaries and investments.
Timber does contribute a significant portion, but our consolidated groups, both in manufacturing and services, have also contributed positively. And so it is really the suite of our operations that affect the amount that's paid right here.
Another 30% of shareholders will get smaller $160 dividends based only on the corporation's earnings. Those people are enrolled in village corporations, which get the resource money directly from Sea Alaska. They can pass the money on to their members, and many do. The remaining 10% of Sea Alaska shareholders get only the $160 distribution. They're new enrollees who hold a different type of stock that does not allow access to resource earnings from other corporations. All figures are based on 100 shares of stock, the most common amount. The December shareholder payout totals $17 million. About $14 million of that comes from the resource earnings from other corporations. The payout follows a spring dividend of about $560 for urban and at-large shareholders and about $270 for village and new enrollees. This is Ed Schoenfeld reporting from Juneau.
Alaska News Nightly is brought to you in part by the Alyeska Pipeline Service Company, operating and maintaining the Trans-Alaska Pipeline, and by
First National Bank Alaska, working shoulder to shoulder with Alaskan businesses for nearly a century. Member FDIC, equal housing lender.
today is the Great American Smokeout, a day set aside nationally to help people consider giving up the habit of tobacco addiction. The Alaska Native Tribal Health Consortium just celebrated 2 years of being a totally smoke-free facility and campus. Christine Brubaker is the Tobacco Cessation Clinical Coordinator for ANTHC. She says thousands have joined cessation programs in Anchorage and across the state at tribal clinics. Brubaker says although nationally people who join programs are only successful about 20% of the time, the Alaska programs usually have success rates twice that average. She says ANTHC studied recommendations from lots of different programs.
They really took a look at those and asked themselves the question, how can we Alaskanize these? How can these recommendations work for Alaska Native people and for people living in rural, more rural and remote areas of Alaska?
Alaska Natives have some of the highest rates of tobacco addiction in the country. Brubaker says there has been a downward trend, particularly among Native youth, and she says the challenge is to have resources available in rural areas for those who are ready to give up the habit.
And the persons who deliver the counseling and the treatment are people from that community, workers in that community. So it's that local connection to someone who is, you know, from your geographic location, from your culture, someone that you can really relate to and feel comfortable with when you're trying to do which for some people is one of the most difficult things they'll ever do is quit their addiction to tobacco.
Alaska was recently rated number one in the country for spending tobacco settlement funds on tobacco prevention programs by the Campaign for Tobacco-Free Kids, the American Lung Association, and others. Brubaker says ANTHC holds a number of grants and contracts with the state to help manage the cessation programs across the state.
But there's also a significant, very, very large tribal investment in those programs as well, both here at ANTHC and out in the rest of Alaska within all of those programs. So, but the state is a great partner in this, and they do provide a lot of support, and they do direct funding towards these programs.
The report rating Alaska number one says tobacco companies spend more than $28 million in marketing and advertising in Alaska, three times what the state spends on cessation efforts. A new study shows part of Alaska's western population of stellar sea lions is still in decline, but much of the state's population is stable or increasing. KDLG's Adam Kane has more.
Lowell Fritz works with the Alaska Ecosystem Program in the National Marine Mammal Laboratory. He says that overall, the western population remains stable or on a slight decline since the 2004 study. However, movement among sea lion populations makes the counting a little more complex.
We found slightly greater numbers overall in that area, but we think that that's been largely due to some net movement of animals from southeast that we actually counted in the Prince William Sound area. We had a count that jumped by over 1,000 animals from previous estimates in that region, and it's way in the easternmost part of the eastern Gulf. And our modeling and Brandreth site work and some other work suggests that that could have been due to some movement of animals from southeast that we counted in that area.
Counts in western Alaska are also inconsistent, with gains in the eastern Aleutian sea lion populations balanced by declines in the population further west.
There's some increases also in the eastern Aleutians, and that's steadily increased over the last 4 years. But it's been largely balanced by declines further west. So in the major part of the Aleutians, from Islands of Four Mountains west through Attu, we're seeing continued decline. And that's a fairly large area. It represents about 25 or 30% of the whole western stock in Alaska. And we're seeing quite a continued decline out there. As for why, that is a question of considerable debate at this point. It does look like it might relate to food supply. We are seeing where we have branded animals and information on individuals, we are seeing survival increase since the 80s.
Research could be used to determine whether or not stellar sea lions should be delisted from the Endangered Species Act. Delisting the sea lions would require a stronger show of population increase, which has yet to be seen. The population as a whole, Fritz believes, is stable. However, it is difficult to tell with the high degree of regional variability. In Dillingham, I'm Adam Kane.
An Anchorage pediatrician died after a snowmobile slammed into his dog sled during a mushing excursion in northwest Alaska. Alaska state troopers say 53-year-old Roger Golub was killed in the crash Wednesday night. A woman riding in the sled, Tracy Schaefer of Kotzebue, was injured and is in critical condition at Providence, Alaska Medical Center. Troopers spokeswoman Megan Peters says two people were on the snowmobile. She says the snowmobile was traveling in the same direction as the dog team when it hit the sled on a trail near Kotzebue. Alcohol was involved in the crash. Residents of Shungnak said goodbye today to a woman who devoted her life to teaching the Inupiaq language. Ruthie Sampson was 54 years old when she died of a massive stroke earlier this week on a trip to Anchorage. She was passionate about keeping the endangered Inupiaq language alive. Sampson wrote an Inupiaq dictionary, helped develop an Inupiaq computer program, and taught classes in the language. KSKA radio host Nellie Moore worked with her at KOTZ in Kotzebue in the 1970s. She says Sampson did a lot in her short life.
She was one of those people who became a tradition bearer without intending to. I think she was just a natural-born speaker. She was really good at working with people, and her own personality, which was just a truly good person, made her kind of the glue in northwest Alaska as far as keeping the language going.
Sampson moved to Shungnak with her husband Luke in 2004. Both worked as pastors for the Friends Church. Moore says she was the kind of person you hope you could be.
She had a really sharp sense of humor, but at the same time, she was very modest. She didn't, you know, she wasn't one of those people who would be real flashy or say, I'm the queen of the Inupiaq language. She was just, you know, just a real, genuine, wonderful, happy person who loved her family and her children dearly.
Sampson had four children and five grandchildren. Friends and family gathered for her funeral today in Shungnak. Another service will be held Saturday in Selawik, where Sampson was born. And that's all for this edition of Alaska News Nightly. We had reports tonight from Dan Bross in Fairbanks, Casey Kelly in Homer, Ed Schoenfeld in Juneau, and Adam Kane in Dillingham. APRN's Libby Casey reported from Washington, D.C. Our editor and producer is Annie Feit. Gooseberry Peter is our audio engineer. And I'm Laurie Townsend. Good night.
Alaska News Nightly was made possible by Alaska Business Monthly, giving voice to Alaska business.
Imersu nyaksili chok ilo rukuich ataningoni Alaska mi angune likunlo kalungne likunlo. Imersu ibig muli kisinyaksok January 9. Kangyaksili ako kuwit tochlogodin 1-800-478-1456. Fish and Wildlife kut unak kilgutigigat.
Help manage subsistence hunting and fishing in Alaska. Apply for a seat on your local federal Subsistence Regional Advisory Council. The deadline for applications is January 9th. For more information, call 800-478-1456. This announcement is sponsored by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service Office of Subsistence Management.
Miss our newscast today? Listen to APRN's Alaska Morning News, Economic Report, and News Nightly on the web at aprn.org.
This is APRN, the Alaska Public Radio Network.